The following is a presentation of the Town of North Hempstead's Project Independence and WCWP. Welcome to Project Independence and you.
Welcome to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. This is Project Independence and you. I'm your host, John Ryan, and my co-host today, is Ruth Wallisoff. Good morning, Ruth.
Hi.
Ruth is from Great Neck. We're both from Great Neck, so we were discussing that earlier. We could be coming out here together. Before we go to our first guest, I always like to tell everybody about Project Independence and the importance for Project Independence in this community. Project Independence is the Town of North Hempstead's initiative to help seniors age in place. And if there's anything you need to remember, it's 311. That's the call center, which is active 24/7. As of August, from Project Independence alone, 17,000 phone calls have come in with seniors looking for information, and they run the gamut. Actually, 1,400 of them were health-related. And then there's something, honestly, as simple as you need help changing a light bulb. This time of year, we have organizations that will come and take the air conditioner out of your house because it's difficult for a senior. Help clean gutters that might be overflowing, only on the first floor. Little things that... You know, to call a handyman is going to cost you a couple of $100s. You call the town. We have volunteers.
If you're lucky enough to get the handyman.
Well, that's true, too. Whereas you call the town, we have volunteers that will come over to do minor stuff. We have transportation for doctor visits, transportation for shopping. Some of them are free. Some of them are 50% off. And we go, the bus will take you to the hub where there's, you know, the laundry and the supermarket and the hairdresser, et cetera, et cetera. So really, and the number of programs.
It's really fantastic.
Yeah, there's probably 5 to 10 programs a day someplace throughout the town of North Hempstead, physical activity, mental activity, community stuff. And I say this all the time. There's many, many studies. As we age, the most important thing is diet. Second most important thing is exercise. And third is socialization. And we cover socialization and diet because some of these things, there's food, etc. So anyway, 311 is the number to call. Any questions? We have partnerships all over the island. And we also have this radio show. And what we try to do on this radio program is bring interesting topics to our seniors. And it really is, because at the end of the show each week, we turn around and say, my God, I didn't know that. How interesting, etc. Today, we have Rich Brancefort. And Rich is the publisher of Good Times Magazine. And the interesting thing about Good Times Magazine, actually, no, I'm not going to tell you what the interesting thing is. Rich will. Rich, thank you so much. We've been chatting here for a few minutes before we started, and Rich is giving us some background, but it makes more sense to come from you. Good morning, Rich.
All right, thank you. It's great to be down here, and thank you for inviting me. I guess the most interesting thing about Good Times Magazine is it's still going. It's 48 years now that we've been publishing. I started the paper April 1st, 1969. I did it on April 1st because I was afraid it wouldn't work out. And this way I could tell everybody it was a joke and if it didn't work out. Over the years, we've had a couple of other publications, including Antiques and Collectibles Magazine, all started on April 1st. Well, of course, they didn't all work out as well as Good Times has.
Now, just what is Good Times? For somebody who doesn't have it in front of them and
Good Times
is not familiar with it.
Long Island's arts and entertainment paper. It covers music, film, theater, dining. We have a bowling column. We have a classic rock column. We have an EDM column. We cover just about anything that's related to the arts. We'll cover anything from the Spooky Walk to Clark Gardens to the Gold Coast Center to the 50-plus comedy festival that's going on. So we try and cover things that are of interest to people who like to go out, like to see entertainment, and find that there's a lot of great things right in their own backyards.
And it's free.
It's free.
It's available at retail places?
It's free.
Hundreds of retail places?
Yes, it's free at 400 retail locations throughout Long Island. Anything from the space at Westbury, clubs, restaurants, recording studios, the Roslyn Public Library kind of a place. We also have a digital edition at issue.com/goodtimesmag. And you can read the whole issue online for free.
I have found it to be lively and fun and appealing. And it's fun, and it's a jam-packed publication covering local music and entertainment primarily in Long Island. Am I right?
Yeah. Our emphasis is just to promote all the good things that are going on right here on the island.
Okay. And you include interviews with show business personalities. Can you tell us about one interview that you found most appealing?
Probably the most famous interview that we ever ran was the Allman Brothers' Eat a Peach album was named after the interview in Good Times magazine. The writer had spent 3 days with Duane Allman, and she asked him a question rather flippantly, how do you feel about the peace movement? And he said to her, every time I go back to Georgia, I eat a peach for peace. And when I saw that in the article, I blew it up into a big outtake. And a couple of years later, Capricorn Records sent us a letter saying that it was probably one of Duane's favorite interviews. Would it be all right if they used that for the name of their upcoming album? And of course, it became probably the biggest album selling of all time for the Allman Brothers.
Really? That's interesting. Wow.
Very interesting. And I love to read about interviews with famous people. And you mentioned that it's successful. It has been running over 48 years. Now, I remember reading about a study done by the Magazine Publishers of America that showed advertising revenue fell for almost every newspaper and magazine in 2008. And what do you attribute your success to?
Well, I think, first of all, is when people say readership is falling, it's accurate. But, you know, you can still be active and successful with just a smaller base. You may not have the large number of people that were once out there. Everybody's gone to smartphones. But there's an awful lot of people that still love to read print. I got a call 2 weeks ago from Ron Alexenberg, the former president of Columbia Records. He was the one who discovered Boston and Aerosmith. He had moved to from Great Neck to California, and he was calling up to see if he could subscribe to Good Times magazine because he said he considers it his hometown paper. And he says, I still like to just sit in a chair and go through the newspaper leisurely. We come out every 2 weeks, so there's 2 weeks' worth of information in there, including a music calendar with over 400 listings of who's playing at all the local clubs.
How large a staff do you have?
We have a small staff. There's two full-time people. There's three part-time people. And then there's probably 20 writers. Some of them have been with us for 20, 25 years, including Lloyd Carroll does our sports column. Jane Klein does our Broadway theater column. So we're more where to go and what to do than we used to be years ago, where it was big in-depth interviews.
I thought the name of the publication was Good Times Magazine.
Yes.
So, but is it a newspaper or is it a magazine? What do you think?
Years ago, I realized that when you told somebody you were publishing a newspaper, they thought you were a community newspaper or a daily. And we were always magazine format. We were magazine in the same way that Rolling Stone was a magazine. And even though it's printed on print, our design and layout is magazine format. And that's the way we've always presented it. We consider ourselves to be a magazine.
You know, I think most people think magazine of glossy. Yeah. That's my concept. And see something glossy, whereas this is, it is magazine style.
And it's actually gone the opposite direction because the cost of glossy has become so high that publications have cut back on everything from the size of the publication. A lot of times the inside will be newsprint, but just the covers will be glossy mm-hmm. on even national magazines mm-hmm. just okay. to save money.
Mm-hmm. That makes
so
sense.
This saves money.
Well, it saves money over a glossy. I mean, you can't really cover the cost of a glossy publication using local people, local advertisers.
Now, I know you have digital copies online that are available, but it's previous issues, not the current issue.
No, it's the current.
Oh, there's the issue.
The issue that came out 2 days
issue?
Ago is already up on our issue.com site.
So do you find that most people try to get the print version? Or?
Yeah, print is still far and away popular with our readers. Our readers do tend to be a little bit older. A lot of them have been reading the paper 15, 20, 25 years. I constantly run into people that say, oh, I've been reading the paper since I was a kid in college. Or they don't go to some of the places that they used to go to, and they're delighted to find that it's still going. So when we do a fair or a festival tomorrow, we're going to be at a guitar show in Brooklyn. People constantly come over and say, oh, I can't believe you guys are still going. I love the paper, and where can I get it?
Uh-huh. No, it's amazing. And the thing is, which I find so interesting, is the various how you wind up getting the interviews with people. I mean,
That's super
easy. Is it really easy?
Super easy. Kurt Loder from MTV was my music editor. Dave Frick from Rolling Stone was my music editor. Lennon Maltin from Entertainment Tonight was my film editor. Mitch Schneider, who owns the largest PR firm in the world for rock musicians and for EDM artists, worked for me for $4 an hour in the basement of my office in Jamaica, Queens, when he started out. So we have a very, very, very well-connected network of people who are in the industry, and they appreciate the fact that when something is in good times, it's going to be well written. You know, everybody's a blogger these days, but nobody's a writer anymore. And we find that out when we want to interview people for jobs. We just can't find people who can write.
It's interesting. It's sad. It's really sad. But you received an MBA from Columbia Graduate School of Business. Do you attribute that, partly of that, to your success?
To be honest with you, no. I went to Columbia for 2 years, and my first job
For people listening to this who are trying to get their grandchildren to go to school.
I was a little bit different. I came from Queens College. I was very local. The MBA was great, and I actually went to the business school because I was going to be a politician. I wanted to be in politics. I wanted to go for my law degree. I quickly realized, looking at my grades, that I wasn't going to make any good law school. So I applied to Columbia University Business School and NYU. NYU was about 55th in the listings in those days. This is 1968. And Columbia was number three. I received a rejection from NYU that said basically, sorry, but your grades don't meet our high academic standards. We hope
That's
you find
amazing.
Some way to continue your
That's
education.
Amazing.
A week later, I received a letter from Columbia University. Says, we'd like to interview you for becoming a student. And I went up for the interview, and the first question that I was asked by a group of deans was, we need someone to be editor of the Graduate Business News. Nobody wants to run the school paper. Would you be interested if you were to get selected to be a student? And I looked and I said, I've already been to the newspaper office. I've met Mike, the editor, and I'd love to do it. And a week later, I got my acceptance to Columbia. I took the acceptance letter. I mailed it to the admissions department of NYU, and I wrote on it, I found a way.
That's a great story, though.
That is a great story. You know?
But the one thing, even going into reference with the MBA and the success of Good Times, is dedication. You know, you're behind. You could come out with straight A's in your MBA, not be dedicated, not be focused, and you're not going to do anything. And you probably didn't even need the MBA because your focus and your dedication to
this. The MBA made you think very structured, which was great. I learned a lot about marketing and niche markets and market segmentation, which I found in the real world when I went out to sell people. They could care less. When I went to speak to the head of advertising at Columbia Records, she didn't know where Long Island was. I said,
really?
I gave the market studies and the demographic. I said, you know, there are 8 million people living on Long Island. And she looked at me. She says, wow, that's great. And her next question was, where's Long Island? She was from Minnesota. And that's happened 1,000 times. And unfortunately, all of us who live here on Long Island do live under the shadow of Manhattan. It overshadows the performing arts centers, the radio stations, the governments. And they don't. That's why a lot of people don't realize the gems that we have here on Long Island.
That is a good point. And it's still to this day that, you know, if you're doing theater, anything on Long Island, and it pales, it's conceived as paling in reference to Manhattan, and some of this stuff is just as good, but it's never going to, you know, get that same aura of sophistication about it.
When I graduated from Columbia, I had two job offers: to go to work for AT&T at the unbelievable price of $210 per week, or to work for Jimi Hendrix.
At the price of what?
$95 a week. At the time, 1968, Jimmy wasn't the god he became later after he died. He was a guitar hero. But in fact, his public relations firm, the head of the public relations firm's brother, was in my marketing class. He said, oh, you love to write. You love music. They're looking for a publicist for Jimi Hendrix. So I went down. I did the interview. And they said, oh, you'd be perfect for the job. It pays $95. And I said, okay, what would I be doing? Really excited because I had been wanting to get into public relations. They said, well, Jimmy has a problem. He may be a great guitarist, but he can't collect money from people. So he constantly goes to these clubs all over the United States, and he gets stiffed by club owners. So I thought about it. I said, $95, $210, 2 years for the MBA. And besides, I don't want to collect money from club owners. And I took the job with AT&T, where I stayed for all of 3 months before I started Good Times. And the irony is that 48 years later, I spent 90% of my adult life having collected money from club owners, which I still do today. And I've done it in 7 different states, including Savannah, South Florida, Ohio, Maine, Delaware, where I had papers over the years. So
Where did you get the
hold
idea?
Hold on, Ruth, we have to take a break.
Okay.
It's amazing how things spin around in life. We're listening to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. We'll be right back.